It's time the world heard about the real Santa Claus. Today on For All the Saints.
For your flock you were a rule of faith, an image of humility and a teacher of abstinence. Your lowliness exalted you, your poverty enriched you. Oh, Holy Father Nicholas, pray to Christ our God that our souls may be saved.
Well, actually, maybe the saint behind Santa Claus, and I think you all know what we're talking about. Of course, Saint Nicholas of Blessed Memory. Theodora Elizabeth is with us again on For All the Saints, and what a delight on this time of year that we celebrate his feast, that we talk about the venerable Saint Nicholas of Myra. Saint Nicholas, of course, is known for a lot of things, Theodora, but we're going to concentrate on just a few of those today. And let's start off talking a little bit about his early life. Do you know about when he was born?
That's unsure. He became a bishop before the last great persecution under Diocletian, which was from 284 to 305. And he appears to have been somewhat young when he was made a bishop.
And apparently comes from a family of at least one bishop as an uncle, right?
Yes. His uncle, also named Nicholas, was bishop of Patara, also in Asia Minor.
Now, prior to the Council of Nicaea and prior to Constantine, there were a lot of persecutions, and we seldom think about the bishops who came to Nicaea as those who suffered persecution themselves. So St. Nicholas then, of course, came to Nicaea having already experienced persecution prior to the legalization of Christianity.
Yes, he was in prison under the Diocletian persecution. When the Edict of Milan came about, where St. Constantine legalized Christianity, he was able to openly lead his flock again. But even when he was in prison, he was encouraging them, helping them to remain steadfast in their faith.
Well, when we think of Nicholas of Myra, we think of him, of course, as a person who was very charitable, who helped people, and of course our tradition of giving gifts to one another stems in large part from his generosity, but there's also some theological ramifications of his life that we're going to talk about as well. Where do you want to go first, the theology or the giving?
Theology. Not long into my journey to Orthodoxy, I was very surprised when I learned that St. Nicholas was an attendee as a bishop of the First Council of Nicaea in 325. Tradition has it, while there, he got so incensed by Arius the heretic that he punched him in the nose. It was against practice for a bishop to punch a priest. So he was temporarily put in jail. But the Virgin Mary and several other saints appeared to the other bishops with a gospel book and St. Nicholas's omophorion. That is the stole with the crosses on it that you see draped across the shoulders of early bishops in their icons. And by this, the other bishops knew that St. Nicholas was to be brought out of prison and be reinstated to the episcopate.
Well, we just don't think of St. Nicholas as having a temper, but here is a man who was defending the faith, and even at his own peril, and in this case, the peril of Arius, and here we have it, Nicholas taking action, and of course, now that's a story that we can remember with great fondness and appreciation for the zealous way in which he defended the faith. Now, then, he was also one of the signers, then,
yes,
of what became our statement of faith.
Correct. And I don't know about you, but for me, that's very... You have this very beloved saint. He's patron of children, but yet he stood up for the faith. And that was quite struck me. And a priest I know, when he was on his journey to Orthodoxy, that was very important to his children as well.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that generosity. And I know there's just so many wonderful stories about Nicholas and the way he gave to people. There are some famous ones, and we want to share at least one that had to do with a man and his daughters.
The most famous story, many people believe this is how Christmas stockings came about. There was a formerly rich man in his town that was now destitute, and he was going to sell his three grown daughters into prostitution so they could have money. Back then, when women were sold into slavery, that's what it meant. They were going to be prostitutes. However, on three successive nights, as they were sleeping, St. Nicholas threw, now tradition kind of varies on this point, threw bags of gold either down the chimney or through a window. And the ones down the chimney kind of landed in stockings that were hung up to dry in front of the fire. And these bags of gold enabled the three daughters of this formerly prosperous merchant to have dowries, and then they were able to get married and were saved from prostitution.
Yes, and some of those traditions now continue, as you know, bags of coins are distributed to children, and bags of candy are distributed to children. And I know at our parish, our kids always look forward to St. Nicholas Sunday, because there's even a little visitation from old St. Nick, the real one, in costume.
The gift-giving traditions with St. Nicholas Day, which is December 6th, are more modest than those in association with Christmas. But Christmas, as we all know, has gotten quite over-commercialized in the last, say, 50 or 60 years. St. Nicholas Day, it is often chocolate coins, gold foil wrapped in remembrance of the coins that were given to those three women, nuts, some small candies, oranges, apples, that sort of thing. And in fact, in not that long ago in American history, if you read, say, Laura Ingalls Wilder's Little House books, that was the Christmas presents. Those were what were in the stockings on Christmas Day.
Hmm. And I suppose if we were to really follow the intention of the feast, we would be giving gifts at St. Nicholas Day while we're still in preparation for Nativity, and wouldn't be thinking so much about gifts at Christmas time.
From some reading I've done, some internet discussion boards and email lists I'm on, some families are trying to move the gift-giving emphasis away from Christmas and the overwhelming amount of gifts and moving it to St. Nicholas Day. St. Nicholas Day, maybe as kids get older, you'll give them a little something more, but it might often be something spiritually related, a book, icon, something like that. I know for my new little goddaughter, she will be getting a Christmas tree ornament with St. Nicholas on it, an icon.
Well, it's a great opportunity to train our children in some church history and into the price paid for their faith. And of course, the ultimate price of our Lord Jesus Christ was paid for us, but then the price paid by those who fought for the faith and those who were persecuted and even in many cases martyred for the faith. Now, St. Nicholas himself, was he martyred?
No, he was not. He died in old age of illness about 330, not long after the Council of Nicaea.
And do you know when the tradition started to kind of take hold with remembering St. Nicholas in early December?
December 6th seems to have been the day he died, because with the early, very, very early saints, they were remembered on the date of their martyrdom, which was kind of their birthday into heaven. And eventually, other saints who did not die a martyr's death were recognized. And they're generally recognized on the date they died. So we can take it pretty for certain that St. Nicholas died on December 6th. And the traditions of the veneration of him seem to go back very far. He has always been quite a favorite in Russia, especially. There are many churches in Russia named Nicholas. The last Russian Tsar, Nicholas II, was named after him. One of the first Russian princes, actually in Kiev, was baptized with the name of Nicholas. So this goes back very far. St. Nicholas is also known, his full title in the church is St. Nicholas the Wonder Worker of Myra in Lycia.
Now, we've heard about the story of the two young maidens and the gifts that were given. But there are other stories that are not as quite as well known, but are nonetheless fascinating. And maybe you could share one or two of those.
Yes, I came across in my research online a very interesting story how St. Nicholas helped a monastery during World War II. This was a monastery on Mount Athos, and this is how it goes. "What are you doing?" the unknown priest asked. "Is this all the wheat you have? No more?" "The fathers at the Athenite monastery replied that this was all they had indeed. It was December, and they were unable to buy more because of the fascist occupation. It should be noted that 10,000 okas weight of wheat was needed a year for the monastery's survival, and they could not even buy one oka of it. The unknown priest took a few wheat kernels in his hand, blessed them, and threw them on top of the rest of the wheat. He blessed the four points of the horizon, the monastery, and the sea, and then was about to leave. "Where do you come from?" the fathers asked. "Stay to have something to eat." "I come from very far away, from Myra in Lycia," he said, and departed. One of the brothers had in the meantime gone for some food to offer the visitor, but the elder, who turned out to be the monastery's protector, had vanished. The remaining 150 okas of blessed wheat lasted for half a year, that is, from the month of December, when St. Nicholas appeared to them, until the following July, when the new crop came in.
I've not heard that story before. Here's an appearance of St. Nicholas centuries later. And I'm sure there are some untold stories that we will hear about only in eternity. Well, we just have maybe a minute left, Theodora. Any other story that you'd like to share about St. Nicholas of Myra?
Yes, St. Nicholas's relics, the main portion of them, are not in an Orthodox country. They are in Italy, in Bari. They have been there since the 11th century. The area in Asia Minor where St. Nicholas was, which is now Turkey, had been invaded. And he appeared in a dream to some monks in Italy and told them, "Take me away from this barbaric place." And they came and got him. And when they uncovered his relics to move them, his bones were exuding myrrh. And he has now been in Bari since then. Earlier in the 20th century, the Roman Catholic Church gave some of his bones to a Greek Orthodox church in New York. And on September 11th, when the World Trade Center was attacked, there was a very small Greek Orthodox church by the name of St. Nicholas that was right in the shadow of the two towers. And the church was destroyed when the towers collapsed. There was a small golden reliquary with some relics of St. Nicholas. And everyone from that parish was telling the rescue workers, "Please keep your eyes out for it. It is very precious to us." But it was never found. We do not know if it was stolen, if it is still buried beneath, or if, like so much else from the towers, it was just pulverized.
Well, with that, we're going to have to bring our time to a close. We've been learning about St. Nicholas, and what a great story it is, and what a wonderful time of year to tell it. And we want to thank Theodora Elizabeth for joining us again today on the For All the Saints series. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
In Myra you were revealed as a worker of holy things, fulfilling the gospel of Christ. You laid down your life for your flock and saved the innocent from death.